With the opposition focused on social justice and workers' rights, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker managed to overcome a recall challenge this past week. It's been all over the papers. I know you've been watching it. Many talking heads have painted this as a warning for President Obama come the November election. Are they reading too much into it? And what else has been going on at the state level that might help predict the outcome in the fall elections? Joining me in the studio is the person who answers all of these kinds of questions and a whole lot more, George Washington University Assistant Professor of Political Management, Greg LaBelle, who spent years in the trenches working on numerous presidential campaigns. Greg, I'm always glad to see you. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Hi, Welton. It's always good to see you, too.
Well, you know, the big political story this past week was the Wisconsin recall election. Do you agree or disagree with those who say the outcome doesn't bode well for Barack Obama's chances at reelection?
Oh, we're doing what we do so well in this country. We're overstating the impact, and we do that on both sides and every chance we get. I do think that this is a bit of an overstatement of what happened. I think one of the immediate things you look at is some of the exit polling, which showed that a number of people, while going in and voting to keep Governor Walker in office, were also indicating that they were supporters of President Obama and planned to vote with him for him in the fall. So I think right there you have a disconnect that you have to consider. And I think we see this. The Romney folks are being very careful about how they're talking about Wisconsin. And I think they recognize the challenge here. I think Wisconsin has not been on their radar screen. They haven't invested hardly anything there right now. They're not. They hadn't planned on doing it. And they have to be careful the Republicans don't start to get a little bit cocky from this by, as we said, reading too much into what this means. You look at the exit polls and you see a majority of people who voted in Wisconsin don't like the idea of a recall. Yeah. There were many people who were voting against the idea of a recall as opposed to for or against Governor Walker.
So that may have been a bigger factor, say, than the weaknesses of the organizers who put the campaign together?
Well, I think that was a factor. I think that you can't ignore the fact that organized labor created some challenges for itself in picking a fight in the nominating period of this whole process. I think if Democrats had managed to coalesce around one candidate, things might have been a little bit better. Bottom line is an awful lot of money and an awful lot of time was spent on this that may not have been necessary.
Well, Walker's opponents have framed their defeat as proof that the kind of money Citizens United has allowed into our elections has redefined our democracy. Walker outspent his challenger, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, at least 7-1, with most of the donations to Walker coming from out of the state rather than in the state. I mean, do you buy into that as well?
Well, it does show us what the impact of money can be, and we do know we have watched this through the presidential nominating process. The huge sums of money that Governor Romney had at his disposal, not directly at his disposal, but being spent on his behalf, that were able to literally crush some of his opponents at key points along the way as we've gone through the late winter and spring. So clearly that is a factor, and it will continue to be a factor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've mentioned that Republicans would do well not to get overly excited and thus cocky about where they are getting ready for the November elections. Are there lessons here for progressives in the Wisconsin recall results?
Yeah, focus. As I said, I think that this may have been a huge mistake, and I think we see that. I suspect that the White House saw it that way from the beginning, which is why the president chose not to get involved in this. I'm not so sure that he necessarily saw it as a definite loss, but I think the White House was not happy that a decision was made to invest this kind of money and time into this effort. The other side of that argument is the Democrats in Wisconsin argue, well, now we've gotten a chance to test our field. They didn't quite pass the test, I guess, at least in the short term. But that seems to me a little bit more like Monday morning quarterbacking than anything.
How did you feel about the way the White House handled Wisconsin?
Well, I think the White House did exactly what they should have done. It would be very risky. The president takes a little flack for not being having gotten involved. Had the president gotten involved, he would have been putting his prestige on the line for an issue that, as I said, I don't think they were 100% sure made a lot of sense. And running the risk of losing that while putting the president out front would have been much more damaging than where we are right now with a loss in Wisconsin.
There are a lot of people recently who are saying that the Obama campaign has taken on a far too negative tone. It's a common charge on cable news recently, but a study by a media analysis group identified 70% of Obama ads as positive compared to only 27% of Romney's. How do you see that?
Well, and those numbers are about right. I was looking at some of those numbers a little while ago. And you have to remember that much of the Romney ads right now are being produced by those third parties, by the Crossroads organization and others. And Crossroads has dumped something like $22 million into advertising. 100% of it is being characterized as negative advertising. So if you take the stuff that the Romney campaign itself is doing, which is really a small amount compared to what's being done from some of these other organizations, you see a real heavy leaning toward negative advertising. I've seen some of them at home, and everything I've seen has been really very negative. The Obama campaign is, I think, now running something like 12% of its advertising is negative, according to third-party sources mm-hmm. that track this stuff. So there really is a disparity. The thing I find that's interesting is that we started this campaign a little bit, this general campaign a little early. We started at Memorial Day instead of Labor Day.
Well, I thought it was a decade ago.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? But one thing that strikes me as interesting is we have yet, or at least I have not yet seen the traditional initial soft piece that a challenging candidate does. Usually a candidate comes out of the blocks with a piece that sort of introduces the candidate to the American public. And it's one of those Morning in America kind of pieces. You know, this is Romney, this is his family, he's a great dad, wah, wah, wah. I haven't seen that. And I'm wondering if they're holding that for Labor Day. And they're just letting their allies sort of do all the dirt slinging right now. But it's a little bit unusual for the way these campaigns usually unfold.
Well, okay, let's just at this point in the campaign, suppose you could recommend one major change to each of the campaigns. What would you recommend?
You know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. With regard to the Obama campaign, I still see there an unevenness in their messaging. They still don't seem to have figured out exactly what they want to say, how they want to say it, and to whom they want to say it. And this continues to be a problem. You roll into that former President Bill Clinton and his propensity to say whatever he wants to whomever he wants, whenever he wants, and it begins to create some problems. And the former President Clinton's people actually uncharacteristically acknowledged this week that he really kind of stepped on the lead out there and made some trouble. That's unusual for Clinton and his folks to do that, but they had to acknowledge that some of his statements about Romney and about the president were not particularly on cue.
And what part of the message is getting lost or muffled needs more clarity?
Well, I think that the Obama administration, the Obama campaign is still having trouble making the case for the second term. I think it's important that part of the message has to be, look what we've managed to do, because voters look at incumbents that way. They need to sort of look back and say, this is what we've done for you over the past three and a half years. But – at the same time, they then have to sort of pivot and say, and this is where we're going. I'm not getting a clear picture of where we're going. Now, maybe that's coming. I don't know. But we're not seeing it. We're just not seeing it just yet. And they need to do that. And it needs to be tight. I mean, this is a White House that's very tight on messaging, very careful about messages. The campaign, for whatever reason, seems to be less so.
What do you say to the Romney campaign?
The Romney campaign has an interesting challenge ahead of it. And we've talked – everybody's talked a lot about how the traditional Republican base, conservative Christian voters and so forth, will line up, women, so on and so forth. And we've seen some movement there, probably most notably among conservative Christians. Their dislike for President Obama is strong enough to overcome their suspicions about Mitt Romney, I expect. I wonder if they shouldn't be worrying a little bit more about those Ron Paul voters. Ron Paul was doing, 9 to 13% in these primaries. That's a significant number of people. And I see these Ron Paul voters as the folks who would say, a pox on both your houses, we're staying home. And if these folks decide to stay home, that Romney is not what they're looking – I was going to say their cup of tea, but that would be too much of a pun. But if Romney is too far off base as far as they're concerned, they're just not going to play.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And I don't see any real effort there to deal with that.
Well, that's a good segue to the next thing I wanted to bring up. It seems like that no matter how much any of us bemoan the level of divisiveness in our politics today, that they do, the politics just keep getting more and more divisive. And not just between the political parties. You saw what happened last weekend in the state in which I live part of the time and sometimes tell people about, the Louisiana State GOP convention saw Ron Paul supporters vote in new leadership for the convention. The existing leadership ignored that vote, and two delegates dragged out by police in a way that resulted in broken fingers and damaged prosthetic hip. My gosh, what is going on, Greg?
That was a story and a half. The background for this a little bit. It's not unusual at the end of campaigns that are sort of protest campaigns, new direction campaigns, if you will, campaigns that want to take a party in a different direction. It's not unusual for their people to sort of stick around and begin to take over the party apparatus. It happened on the Democratic side. It happened with George McGovern after 1972. It happened to some extent with Gene McCarthy in 1968. It happened with Gary Hart in 1984. Where those organizers kind of hung around after the fact, after other people got the nomination and the race was run, and begun to sort of take over the party apparatus, and that's how parties sort of change and develop, and it's not unusual. But the Ron Paul people decided not to wait, and they went to the state convention, choosing delegates to the current convention, and just kind of went off.
Yeah.
And brawl is the only word one can use to describe it. And
damaged prosthetic hip.
Yep. I mean, they had police dragging people out by the scruff of their necks and people. It was a scene. It was melee. That's what I mean. I mean, this is the nature of this of many of the followers of Ron Paul, and they were what they were angry at were the Romney people.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't mad at Obama. They were after the Romney folks.
Right.
And I think that maybe the Louisiana convention was unique because it played itself out so dramatically there. But I suspect that there are feelings, if not quite that strong, coming close to that strong in other parts of the country as well.
Yeah. I talked with a really high-ranking religious leader in the Republican Party of Louisiana who was not at the convention for a very excusable reason, and she was telling me, I don't even know whether I'm a delegate or not.
Yeah.
I was going to be, but I don't know whether I am or not. It's all up in the air there.
Yeah. This is utter confusion.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people that have been worried for a long time that politics are really rapidly getting us to a point of impasse. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yes, it is true. I tell my students, in fact, I just started my summer session the other day, and part of my initial lecture is to talk about the changes in political rhetoric. And I tell them that, you know, there was a time when if you disagreed with me, you were wrong. Now it seems if you disagree with me, you're evil. And the difference between those two statements is night and day. I think that this is an era that's been ushered in over the last 20 years or so, and it's catching. I mean, we look at some of the polling data. We look at the Pew Foundation did a study this week, which is just horrifying. May not be too strong a word. Right. We are so divided on partisanship in this country. And the cleavage between the two is becoming so deep that it concerns me. I don't know.
Is the summer going to help us or hurt us? I mean, summer typically sees the public disengage from politics until the fall. Is that going to happen? Will things quiet down, or is this just an opening for the extremists to come in and push their agendas even more?
That's the key question. When we started talking, ordinarily the summer is a quiet time. We get through the primaries and caucuses. We know who our nominees are going to be. Then things quiet down because, you know, we all have other things. We're all going on vacation. Mm-hmm. All the kids are home, all of that. And so it quiets down, and then the campaign really kicks off in Labor Day when kids go back to school. But this year, my guess is that with all the money that's out there in these third party organizations, that the summer is going to be the time, the gap that the campaigns may be leaving in terms of what they're doing is going to be filled and maybe overfilled by some of the really negative stuff that's coming from these organizations, and that's not a good thing.
No, Greg, we have these conversations regularly. The years that you spent working on presidential campaigns gave you so much insight. I mean, you seem to know this stuff inside out. And sometimes I leave our conversations with you giving me a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I leave wondering if I could even spell the word hope. I thank you for today depressing me and yet enlightening us. And you tell us the truth that we better heed and react to in a responsible way. Greg's assistant professor of political management at George Washington University. He's an invaluable resource for us here at State of Belief Radio. And as always today, thank you for coming and being a part of this program, sharing your insights, being a part of the family of this radio.
Thanks, Welton. It's good. It's always good to see you.